Everybody, welcome to the second attempt and opening of this episode of Magic the Amateuring.
Megan, should I go back and do what I did first time?
Man, I'm gonna let you decide.
The sun will come out right now, cause it's a new episode of Magic the Amateuring.
That was a lovely rendition of The Sun Will Come Out, Magic the Amateuring.
Yes, thank you. We are starring on Broadway. We are remounting Annie. Megan and I are going to split the role of Annie.
No, I'm the dog.
Oh,
you just said this. I'm the dog.
That's right. You want to be Sandy. Okay.
I'm Sandy.
That's fine. You can be Sandy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do? I like run out into traffic.
You go across the street and I call you and you come to me.
Oh, okay.
And that's how...
That's like all that Sandy does?
She probably saves a day. I can't remember, actually.
Man.
They hide in a basket of laundry.
They
together?
Do? No, that dog's too big for a basket of laundry.
They wash the dog. Wow, it's been too long, or has it, since I've seen Annie.
I don't feel compelled to ever see Annie again.
But Mrs. Hannigan, the role is incredible.
It is?
I mean...
Didn't they let What's-Her-Face play it in the new one?
I don't know who What's-Her-Face is.
Cameron Diaz.
Oh.
I know. That's the face. I hate Cameron Diaz.
She played Miss...
Oh. I don't hate her. She doesn't deserve that.
Who does deserve your hate, Megan? Give me a list. A
couple of people.
Right. Welcome to Magic the Amateuring. If you don't see us on Broadway, you can see us right here in your earballs. You can also watch with your eyeballs on YouTube at Tulare Community College.
That's
this
right.
Podcast exists in two forms, liquid and solid.
Exactly what kind of dog I am.
Yeah. If you were a dog, what kind of dog would you be?
Oh, a hound.
like a
treeing walker hound.
So a little...
Like kind of like a taller, leaner hound.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Oh, a hound.
Who's just like, look, over there! And is like,
hurr! What dog would I be?
A shih tzu. Tell me you wouldn't be. You want to be like a Pomeranian?
I want to be a Pomeranian, I just don't know if I am.
What kind of dog do you think you are?
I don't know dog well enough. A Papillon.
What's a Papillon?
I'm going to Google it for you, post-haste.
Okay. Google it over here so you're not turning your back on me. Okay. Dogs hate to have if you turn your back on a dog, you don't know what's going to happen.
Megan, tell people what the show is.
Hey, you guys.
Just... I almost started Googling post-haste instead of Papillon.
Well, brother. To be fair, you did say, I'm going to Google that for you, post-haste.
I did.
And it could have been a colon, like, I'm going to Google that for you, colon, post-haste.
There it is.
Oh, yeah, that's you. Yeah. Okay, you can be a Papillon.
Okay, sweet.
Yep.
They have great hair/ears.
Those are great ears. We're a podcast that's not about identifying what kind of dogs people are.
Aren't we? Aren't we just actually that now that we've just...
Now that we've done that, that is what we are now. Yeah. We are rather a podcast that talks to you all about Magic the Gathering. Whether you are a player returning to the game, whether you have never played before and are just arriving, whether you've never heard of it, you stumbled on this by accident, and our voices are so captivating that you just can't turn it off.
Ooh, I hope there's at least one or two of those people.
Or you found us by Googling pizza rolls. And you found our numerous tweets about them.
Could be.
It's definitely a thing that could happen.
No matter what brought you here, we're happy you came. And we've put out the good china to serve you a fine dish of magic knowledge this week.
What are we going to talk about this week, Maria?
So, Megan, we've got some interesting emails from listeners that we're going to talk about GP etiquette. So it's appropriate that I took out the good china. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to talk about a specific GP, which you were recently at GP Portland.
Yes.
The first GP after the Pro Tour, which is always really exciting because we get to
and
see
crazy.
What's stuck to the wall.
That's right. At the Pro Tour, they throw a lot of pasta at a wall, and some of it sticks and is ready to be eaten, and some of it falls to the floor and says, cook me longer.
Yep. Wouldn't it be creepy if your pasta talked to you? Cook me longer.
I would never eat pasta again. If that happened to me once, I'd be done with pasta.
To be fair, though, nobody would eat any food that talked to them.
Wouldn't they? Listener, if you would eat food that talked to you... Tweet at us.
And I'm saying the food wants to be eaten. I'm saying it says, put me in your mouth and eat me.
At MTA Cast, weigh in on this valuable subject.
Yes, so we're going to be talking GP Portland. There's another GP which we'll touch on briefly as well.
Yep, in Rimini.
Conspiracy, we had the first preview cards released for that fun draft format. So.
As well as some new mechanics for that set.
Yeah, we'll go over that as well. We have a big announcement coming up later in the show, and of course, Flavor Text Theater.
Absolutely.
Which is more exciting now than it's ever been before.
That's right. In case you did not hear, we just started talking about it on our last episode. At the end of every month, we will draw one person from our list of Patreon donors.
Yes.
And we will send them all of the cards that we have opened in Flavor Text Theaters in the past month, as well as a couple of additional boosters. So today we have a little draft pack of Shadows Moon Moon.
Nice.
Which is going to go into that pile. We'll probably crack one of these, and then you're going to get two unopened boosters as well.
That's going to be pretty sweet, because not only are you going to get cards to stick in your binder, you're also going to get packs that you can draft with your friends. So go over to patreon.com/mtacast and sign up to become a supporter of the show to be entered in the drawing. We will draw at the end of the month. I want to point this out, Megan.
Yeah.
I did some math today.
You did?
What percentage of our listeners do you think are patrons?
Okay.
You know a few numbers, so this is kind of unfair, but
I'm gonna go with 1%.
It's less than 1%.
Less than 1%. Come on, you guys.
Yeah.
You get sweet bonuses.
Get in there.
These are being added to the ones that we cracked last week. We cracked a pack of Moon, and then we added an unopened pack of Moon.
Right.
So these are going to be joining that for that drawing. Plus, you help us support and continue to create the podcast, getting new equipment, making sure that our current equipment still functions.
I don't want to be like I'm guilt tripping anybody, because the podcast will always, of course, be free and available to people out there in the world. But if you can support us at even a dollar an episode, it goes a long way. And like Megan said, it helps us produce the show for you and hopefully keep continuing making more and better content for you in the future. So if the show is something that gives you joy in your heart or any other part of you, consider throwing
like your
a
mind.
Dollar at us. Like your mind.
Like your mind.
Yes, that's it.
Brain out of the gutter.
Okay. Head on over to patreon.com/mtacast. It's always, of course, much appreciated. For the noobs, GP etiquette. And we're not just talking about GPs, but really any tournament that's played at a higher rules enforcement level than an FNM.
Yeah, we had a couple of questions on Twitter over the weekend and via email that sort of asks some stuff about, like, for instance, if you're watching a match, where should you stand while you're watching it? How far back? How close? Questions sort of like that. That's a little bit more about navigating the environment than it is necessarily about the in-game interactions.
And then we had this question from Angelo, which is related. Thanks for all the content you produce, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like I want to see what the more competitive side of Magic is, but I don't think I'm ready to make the commitment of not only preparing myself financially and mentally, because I'm not sure what to expect. How do you guys gear up and get into the competitive mindset in terms of being more aware of rulings and tournament etiquette? So that's kind of basically what he wants to know in that question, as well as the cost of a GP, which varies a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we'll answer more in an email to you, Angela. But just basically, I want to talk about the tournament etiquette question, because that's a great question. You really don't know what to expect.
No,
in
you
that
really
arena
don't.
Going into your first GP.
Yes, I would say, and we've mentioned this a couple of times, the first thing that you should never be afraid to do is call a judge.
Yes.
If you are unsure of a ruling, if you feel like your opponent is like maybe like weirdly pressuring you, trying to take something back, we're trying to tell you that the rules work a way that you're not sure if they do, it is always appropriate to call a judge and clarify a question. That is
Absolutely.
What they are there for. They're there to make sure that the tournament is being run according to the rules, and that those rules are being enforced fairly and equally.
And it might seem like a little bit of a scary thing to throw your hand up in the air and yell judge, but
I can barely yell the word judge.
Judge, I'm a little mouse!
Yeah. Like, I, like, put my hand up in the air, and then I, like, take it down again, and I put it up, and I'm like, judge? And then usually someone near me will yell it louder, because
for
they're
you.
Just like, you, what are you doing?
People help you out. That's what you're trying to say.
Sure.
But seriously, it gets easier the more you do it.
Yeah.
Like, the more often you yell judge, the easier it is.
That's true.
That sounds like I'm being funny.
Practice makes perfect.
It's true. Yeah, so don't be afraid. The judges, they want to help you. And guess what? So does your opponent. Your opponent would much rather have you make the correct play, I would assume, than something they have to worry about.
They would rather have you make a rules appropriate play than an illegal play.
Well, yes. And if you're calling a judge on your opponent, well, I guess whatever. They just have to deal with it. I would like to play correctly and not win through cheating or win through some kind of error on my part. Yeah. I'm not speaking for everybody, of course, but I'm just saying if that takes some of the stigma away from calling a judge, like it happens all the time. I don't care if my opponent does it. Like, I want us to have a good, fair game.
Yeah.
So call a judge. They like being used. Mm-hmm. For their job. That's what they're there for.
Yep. I would say it does sometimes take a little bit. Like, I'm not saying that all players at a Grand Prix are unfriendly. Lots of them are perfectly friendly and very nice. But I think one of the most interesting and repeatable experiences I've had at Grand Prix is where I will sit down across from the player who's very, like, stone-faced or very stoic. For the entire, like, from the beginning through the end. And then at the end, they're all of a sudden very nice, no matter which way it fell out. But they just were not, like, people who are, like, very talkative.
And nervous, too.
Exactly. So, and I feel like it's a lot of times, or it's the way that they focus. So I think it's important to be aware of, like, the different mental places that people might be. And not to, one, feel like it's a reflection on you of, like, oh, my God, this person who I don't know hates me.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably not it. They're probably just focusing hard.
Right.
Yeah, and also not to, like, pressure them or encroach on that too much. Like, if they need to be, like, pretty quiet and just do, like, the minimum of communication, you know, sometimes that's what another player needs, and it's important to be respectful of that.
And remember to care about yourself, too. I had a story of when we were at GP Vegas that we talked about after that show, which you can find magicthematuring.com. If you search for Vegas, I'm sure it will come up, where I talk about where a situation where I felt pressured by my opponent to do a certain thing, and I didn't call a judge in that situation. And so I've learned since then that calling judge, if you feel uncomfortable at any time, is a perfectly fine thing to do.
So
judges, make sure if you're worried about the rules, it's probably a good idea to familiarize yourself with the cards and the mechanics that are in the current set with whatever you're playing, if it's standard or if it's draft or, I mean, sealed or whatever. But you don't have to, like, kill yourself studying them all night until 1 in the morning. People still read cards. Even the most advanced players will still read their opponent's cards.
You can always take a second to read a card. If it looks like it's, if you're playing something with a format with older cards in it, and you think, like, wow, this is wordy and complex, there's a chance it's been updated in Oracle. So you can always call a judge and ask for Oracle text, which is also something that you can do on foreign language cards.
Yes, absolutely.
And the Oracle text is just basically the updated rules text on a card. We've talked before in the past about, like, the wordiest cards ever that were then, some of them have been, like, very simplified down, and you can get that simplified down text.
There's some really good ones out there, everybody.
There really are.
Then there's basic stuff, like, I am a big proponent of shaking your opponent's hand after a game, whether you've won or lost, saying good game, at the very least, saying good game. Shaking a hand. If you can tell your opponent is super salty after a loss, maybe you just leave him alone. But I like to say good game. I think that's just a nice thing to do. Shuffling your opponent's deck is pretty important. And sometimes we take shortcuts and we just cut the deck. But at the beginning of the match, I would suggest that everybody just do it. We've talked about this on the show before. Just not as an insult to your opponent because you think they're cheating or whatever. Just as a matter of etiquette. We're in a more professional, more competitive setting.
It's not a matter of etiquette. It's a matter of preventing cheating.
Yeah, that too. But that's what I guess I just mean, like, it's sort of expected at that level that you'll shuffle each other's decks.
Yeah.
So it's, don't take offense to it, I guess. Like, yeah, it's like, not somebody saying, oh, I bet you're
shuffle
cheating
your opponent's deck.
Yeah.
Pick it up. Give it a couple of shuffles.
And, of course, keep your eye on the clock. Nobody likes to draw at these tournaments, if at all possible. Of course, sometimes it's unavoidable. But I think it's a matter of etiquette to play at an appropriate speed so that you can try and finish your match naturally with a winner.
Also a matter of rules. There is a thing called slow play.
It is a matter of rules, but it's, like, something to keep in mind, keep in your mind, too. Like, I think it's just being courteous. I mean, it's also a rule, but it's also being courteous to your opponent.
Yeah. And also self-interested. Like you said, you want to win a match.
Yeah.
Going back really quickly to the... Nope, no, I don't remember.
Moving on. We were going to talk about watching a match, and I think...
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you're watching a match, a couple of notes. If you are watching a match that a friend of yours is playing mm-hmm. in, you need to stand behind your friend so that you are not seeing the cards in hand of their opponent.
Yes.
Again, that's just a matter of, like, no one's saying that you're definitely standing behind them to cheat, but you don't want to, like, you might...
You don't want to invite that.
Well, also, and you might have unconscious, like, facial reactions. And that's something to watch whether you're watching your friend or their opponent.
Oh, yeah.
If just trying to keep a straight face, like, that's something I've had to work on for doing text coverage.
Yeah.
Is because I can see players' draws if I'm sitting there typing up a match. And I have to be like, okay, pretend like you don't care. Like, oh, nothing happened. Like, whatever, that draw was... fine.
Yep.
It was not exciting and not exciting. I have no opinion.
We should point out that some tournaments don't let you stand behind the players to watch.
That's going
to
be on day two of any Grand Prix. You can't walk between tables on day twos of Grand Prix for the most part.
But if you're at, say, a GP and there's a feature match area set up, go over there and check out those matches. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
They have them cordoned off anyway, so there's an obvious place where you're mm-hmm. allowed to stand and watch, and they're probably really good players, perhaps some famous people, so you'll probably want to watch. Mm-hmm. And, I think you can learn a lot from watching better players. So
also in those situations, again, this is just some stuff that you kind of pick up from hanging around feature match areas, whether you're working there or you're watching a lot of them. Especially in the very late rounds of a tournament, don't talk about other results that might affect whether the players want to draw or something like that.
Oh, that's a good point.
For instance, if it's in round 15 of a Grand Prix and two players are coming to time, it might be that if you talk about match results and one of them knows, oh, hey, if we take a draw and that was the result of that match, I'm going to make it into top eight. That's information that's going to influence the game outside of just playing a game of Magic.
Right.
Which you don't want to do. And the same kind of goes for, obviously, like, this is something that would more happen at, like, PPTQs. Grand Prix are so big, you're generally not going to, like, you're not going to have friends play players that you played earlier. But, like, if you know the deck that some pro is on, like, don't go yelling about it for their sake, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no, especially if they're playing something, like, cool or innovative, or if you know that they have, like, a crazy sideboard card. It sounds a little hypocritical coming from me because I do, like, do deck techs and stuff like that or talk about fun sideboard cards, but people have agreed to do that, right? Like, if someone comes and sits down and talks to me about their crazy sideboard tech for a matchup, they know that I'm going to publish it onto the website.
Yeah.
Whereas if you played them or you overheard them talking about it, that's like, you know, it's a little touch and go to like go sharing around that information to people who like might be able to do something with it.
Another quick tip about watching matches. If you've watched a match and it's not somebody that you know particularly, offering advice on what they should have done in the match after it ends is probably... I'm just gonna make a guess that people probably don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
You could, I suppose, say, do you want a tip? But I don't even really want to.
No.
I don't want to hear that.
The answer
is somebody who that has happened to me a number of times.
Yeah. Like, there's a time and a place to learn. And sometimes, like, the time and the place is usually not from a stranger after taking a bad loss.
Yeah.
Like, that's not my brain's ideal spot to be like, yes, I will gather information.
Absorb this.
Exactly.
The same goes for if a bunch of your buddies are watching one of your mutual friends after a match. I wouldn't go talking about what happened immediately at the table. I would wait until we walked away from the match and the opponent.
That's smart.
Because we just don't... I mean, it can feel bad to have somebody dissect your loss right in front of you with a group of people.
Yeah.
So, yeah. some quick pointers there. And of course, we've got lots of episodes about preparing for your first GP. Mm-hmm. One was very recent, so you can just go back in our archives. If you just search GP or something like that, you'll see all of our GP episodes on magicallyamaturing.com. Thanks for your question. If you have a question you want to send us, email us magicallyamaturing@gmail.com or 140 characters or less at MTAcast on the Twitters. GP P-Town. Hey, everybody, there's a GP in Portland this past weekend, and Megan was there, sitting literally inches from the players. Inches. I mean, we're all literally inches apart, so.
We were packed like sardines into the convention center. Everybody had to stand and play on tiny tables.
I mean, everything's inches if, you know.
That's true. If you live in America.
If you measure it like that. She was doing text coverage for the GP, which, as we mentioned at the top of the show, was the first big tournament after the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
So were we going to see a lot of Emrakul decks? Were we going to see Bant Company try and come back and give it the 1-2 punch? Or were we going to see something new? The answer is all three of those things are true.
That's very true. What is Bant may never die.
Yeah.
Some people have said.
Yeah.
It will not go away until Collected Company rotates out of the format. And then, even then, who knows? Maybe that deck is so powerful that it will keep Collected Company in Standard.
What are you saying?
I'm saying, like, what if the deck was so overpowering that it was like, oh, rotation's happening.
Except
all of Dragons goes away, but the deck was like, no, Collected Company stays, and Wizards just had to be like, okay.
What if that was how it worked? Like, there was cards that were so powerful that they're the most played card, and they stayed no matter what?
That's called Modern in Legacy.
Oh my god. It is in Modern.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we did see Collected Company. There was 6 of the 8 copies of it in Rimini.
Yes.
So, in the top 8, sorry. So, that, you know, it's still prevalent. It's not gone.
6 out of 8. And the other 2 were what's been called blue-red fevered burn, which
sounds
is
painful.
Yeah, right. Which Pedro Carvalho played at the Pro Tour. He went 9-1 in Constructed.
Nice.
Which is an excellent record, obviously. Yeah, and the deck has kind of been making a splash on Magic Online in the intervening week.
Kenji's been playing it.
Mm-hmm. It uses cards like Thing in the Ice, Thermo Alchemist, and then it has Fevered Visions.
Yeah.
To burn your opponent out.
Didn't we play a deck similar to this in the Community Super League?
We did. We did, but there were no Thermo Alchemists yet.
So that's the real key difference. The O3.
The O3, yeah. That O3 that pings him for damage,
whoa,
man.
See, don't let anybody tell you you can't be relevant in Standard, okay? Because even a little O3 pinger can make it in. Even a Gnarlwood Dryad.
If that little 1-1 death touch for one can make it, so can
so
you.
So can you, buddy. So, Megan, you were up close and personal with a lot of these decks.
Yeah. I looked at them. I put my hands on cards.
Yep.
I actually didn't really.
You didn't?
Put my hands on cards?
Yeah.
No.
You weren't just like, here, can I just touch this?
Hey, excuse me, can I just touch this card? I just need to touch that Thermo Alchemist.
Did I tell you that I daydream about untapping Thermo Alchemist? Because I do. Did you say that?
I forgot that I had said that until someone reminded me.
I'm never going to forget you ever said that.
I don't remember who reminded me most recently, but I was like, oh, that's right. And then the best part was I was like, oh yeah. And like, that was true. Like I did.
I do daydream about it.
It's great. Great feeling.
Which of these decks that you saw this past weekend were some of your heart favorites?
Okay. So obviously the one that was the talk of the town, the cat's meow.
The actual cat meow
was a deck built by a guy named Chris Patello, who was at his second Grand Prix ever.
Wow.
And made top 8 with a deck that he had built called Grixis Cat Pact.
I love it.
It is playing Demonic Pact, and it is playing Harmless Offering.
So good.
So basically, he said most of the games that he won that weekend, it was via, you know, using 3 modes on Demonic Pact.
Yep.
And then giving it to his opponent with Harmless Offering.
Oh my gosh. So we were speculating. We were wondering if this deck would happen because people have been trying to figure out how to make Pact viable. Yeah. In Standard. And once we got the card Donate, aka Harmless Offering,
yeah,
some people were thinking, ooh, maybe this can happen. Mm-hmm. We didn't see it happen at the PT.
No.
So maybe some people put it out of their minds.
Little, it's a little risky.
It's weird.
It's a combo-y. Little strange. It is.
So how is this deck going to win? I remember seeing an interview with him when he said it had basically two ways. Either can yes. Pact and give you it, or it can just be a control deck.
Like I said, I did talk with him, and I did a deck tech with him, which is on Daily MTG in the coverage archive for GP Portland.
Yep.
I forget what I called it. Oh, Free Kittens Take One.
Yeah.
So you can go and find that chat with Chris. And he said, most of the games he won by, like, giving it away. But if they somehow had a way to deal with that, like an Orbs of Warding, for instance, which... It gives the player hexproof, so obviously you can't give them something with Harmless Offering.
Orbs of Warding. Where was that card from?
It is, I believe, an Origins card.
Man, I don't even remember it.
It is 5 mana.
Orbs of Warding.
Yeah, and most people have it against the blue-red fevered burn deck. Because it prevents you from being the target of that fevered burn.
That seems pretty like that deck gets hosed with this in play.
Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
You have hexproof, and if a creature would deal damage to you, prevent one of that damage.
Cost 5.
Yeah, that's true. But again, like you said, it kind of hoses fevered visions.
It's an artifact, so it's a little easier to remove than some things, but...
So this deck was kind of already hanging around in sideboards.
Okay.
And obviously they have hexproof, so you can't Harmless Offering away your pact. But in that case, he said he only won maybe a handful of games throughout the weekend with a Liliana the Last Hope Ultimate.
Oh, sure, yep.
Just make all the zombies.
Make all the zombies. Well, this deck looks really sweet. Super combo-y, which kind of seems like up your alley, Megan.
I am definitely going to try out this deck. I kind of love it. He did say, so a couple of things that different that his deck has going on is that he was playing more Oath of Jace's and Oath of Chandra's than other people were, which he felt was really key in all those Bant Company matchups, because Bant Company has Dromoka's Command, which can make you sacrifice an enchantment. So if your Demonic Pact is the only enchantment you're screwed. But if you have an Oath of Chandra, it's like it already came down and did its job of 3 damage. Like, sure, I'll sacrifice it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of, that was what made his particular take on it a little bit more unique. And, you know, obviously very successful. He made the top 8. He was first in the standings going into top 8.
And I think, too, it doesn't hurt that people were probably surprised by this.
He definitely said that, too, yeah. He said some people just had kind of no idea. One funny thing, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was like, the important thing against Emrakul decks is that you have to beat them before they play Emrakul, or you have to not have a Demonic Pact in play, or, like, give it away a couple, like, a turn early or something while it still has modes left.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, when they control your turn,
they can just
choose the mode of you lose the game.
Hosed! Wow.
Isn't that hilarious?
That's pretty good.
So he said, like, at one point, he, you know, like, Harmless Offering away his pact when it still had a mode left, like, an additional mode left on it. Because he knew his opponent had Emrakul. He was like, okay, I have to, like, I have to get rid of it now.
Just draw your cards. I just can't.
I think he left the discard mode on it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because then they still only have 2 modes, and they might not have a way to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So as long as he survives... Then it doesn't matter if he discarded his hand. They're still going to have to, you know, go through those 2 modes.
Cool. This deck is very innovative and sweet, so congrats to him for thinking it up.
Yeah, it's very cool. Also, coming in 9th place, there is a deck from a guy named Cody Linglebach, who was playing Green-Blue Crush of Tentacles.
Nice.
And it was kind of... It looked a little bit like those early blue-green ramp decks back when people were still playing with those. It does have, like, an Ulamog on its top end. It has, like, a Nissa's Renewal. And it has, like, some other ramp, Explosive Vegetation, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it has a loop, like this lock, of Den Protector and Crush of Tentacles.
Ugh.
So you can just constantly loop them. So you, like, attack for 8 with the squid. Play Den Protector, flip Den Protector, get back Crush of Tentacles, play Crush of Tentacles, bounce the Den Protector, pass the turn. And on your next turn, you know, like, you attack with the squid, you play your Den Protector, you flip your Den Protector, you get back
this Crush of Tentacles. This reminds me of, like, a draft. Do you remember when I did that draft and I had Crush of Tentacles?
Yeah.
And I had some way to keep getting it back onto my graveyard.
I don't remember that, but that's awesome.
I can't remember what it was, but yes, it was a similar feeling. Yeah. I think I played it, like, 3 or 4 times.
It was super cool. And there's a deck tech of that also.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so check it out, dailymtg.com. The winning deck of the weekend was Robert Santana's Jund Delirium.
Yes, which he said was modeled after Joel Larson's Jund Delirium from the Pro Tour.
Yep, so we're casting Emrakul. There's only one. Mm-hmm. So you better cast it.
Yeah. It goes the way, rather than like the Teemer Emerge decks,
yeah.
This goes black for Distended Mindbender, which I saw him
brutal.
Multiple games play turn 3 Pilgrim's Eye, turn 4 yes. Distended Mindbender, take 2 cards out of his opponent's hand.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean...
In a 5-5.
I think we mentioned on the show actually last week that we were surprised we hadn't seen more Distended Mindbender at the Pro Tour.
It was really impressive.
So,
when it was good.
And Owen Turtenwald, who got second at the Pro Tour, he had Pilgrim's Eye in his deck, and we mentioned how absolutely critical that card is for the strategy, because not only is it giving you an artifact creature in your graveyard, it's also casting cost 3, it's mm-hmm. giving you a land to be able to emerge. And yeah, a turn 4 Distended Mindbender is straight up disgusting.
It is. Yeah, and then it was just also, watching this deck, it was super interesting to see how persistent the threats were, just because there were so many ways to get them back.
Yeah, like, Grapple with the Past is not getting
around. I saw him
cast,
like, the same Ishkana, like, 3 times, because his opponent would kill it, and he would just be like,
what a
Grapple.
Nightmare.
Okay, return this Ishkana.
Barf.
Like, so many spiders.
So one thing to say about Pilgrim's Eye, which I thought was interesting, is he said people were playing against him, and they were like, should I have killed that Pilgrim's Eye?
Yeah.
And I think kind of the answer is yes.
Apparently, apparently it was a question that, like, came up again and again and again all day. Because, like, all my opponents keep asking themselves that, of, like, do I kill, like, this stupid 1-1?
But, like,
it's so stupid.
We saw it happen where if he casts it and he's got a Distended Mindbender in hand, and then he
it's
gets
just so gross.
Transgressed mm-hmm. in a match, and then he has to throw away the Distended Mindbender, and it's kind of like, well, no, my hand doesn't do anything because I was counting on that, and then I've got, like, some random other cards in here. So
yeah.
I think it is the right play a lot of the time.
It's so true.
Anyway, yeah, so congrats to Robert Santana with Jund Delirium winning GP Portland. Megan, what else was it? What else did you experience that weekend that was really cool?
Fatigue? Oh, wait.
That's awesome.
You said that's really cool. I thought you were just going to ask what I experienced.
Okay.
My first answer is fatigue.
Fatigue. Okay, got it.
There was a Planeswalker Summit.
Oh, sweet.
So there were so many. There's got to have been like 20 cosplayers there that were... Planeswalkers from the entire Planeswalker pantheon.
It awesome.
Was so cool. There was a guy who was there as Jace, specifically Unraveler of Secrets, with that giant coat.
Yeah.
It's an amazing photo. You can go find an article about it, again, on Daily MTG in the coverage archive of the weekend. And there's a photo of him in, like, this incredible, it's like this huge faux leather coat, and it's awesome. It's so cool. And then there's a woman who was cosplaying as Koth. And she had all of these, she had like a full on like LED light board that went with her outfit that like had different light up parts of the outfit. It was super cool. There's a woman there as Kiora with like a full blue bodysuit and
yes.
face paint. So many awesome photos. It was a ton of fun. It was really cool to see.
If you follow us on Twitter at MTAcast, we retweeted a photo that had all of the Planeswalkers in it at the same time, which is just yeah. epic to see. So that's a quick way where you can find that article, is just go through our past tweets.
Yep.
Really cool. Awesome to see the community come together like that, because... Yeah. Cosplayers are great, and they do a lot of really hard work to make the game come alive for you.
You can see how much work goes into some of those.
Oh, absolutely. So, Megan, you wanna go do a 24-hour stream right now? Is that how you're feeling?
Oh, yes. I've never been more awake. Nor have I ever felt better. I'm not an echo of a human being.
Oh, that's so sad.
I am a full human being.
Do you want to talk about where we're going to be next?
Oh, yeah.
So Portland's done and dusted in the books. Coming up, something pretty exciting, which we're going to announce right now.
Yeah.
Is the World Championships. We're not announcing that, but we're announcing that we're going to be there.
We are going to be at PAX.
Yes.
It's going to be super cool. That's that.
I mean, it is going to be super cool. I'm going to be tweeting and making media from being at PAX, being at Worlds, just checking out the whole scene. It's going to be super awesome. So if you're not a follower of ours on Twitter, please get on over there and do it. You can also follow us on Facebook.com/MTAcast because I'll be posting updates the entire week, you guys. So it'll be like you're there with us.
That's right.
Hanging out at PAX.
If you haven't seen the announcement, there's going to be like a whole Kaladesh street fair.
Yeah, man. It's going to be so cool.
So get a look inside that sick mess.
Yeah.
That was a terrible way to describe. Like, I was trying to say sick mess, like, the way that, like, a the way that, like, a metal band would mean it.
Yeah, I get it. I got it.
Like, sick mess, bro.
You're so metal, Megan. That's why it came off so good.
It really did. I sold it because I am personally so metal.
So we're super excited to be heading out and hanging out at PAX. If you're going to be there, make sure you come and find us at some point. We'll give you a special prize, like always. And just give us a high five because you can never have enough, you know?
No.
Like, you can have too many cupcakes. You can have...
No, you can't.
Okay, let's try this, Megan. I'm going to feed you 50 cupcakes today and we'll see if you still want 51.
Just to spite you, I will.
I know. You don't mess it
up.
Just
to prove a point.
Conspiracy 2, take the crown.
That's right.
Are you ready to take the crown?
There's been a murder.
There has been a murder.
A ghost murder.
And somebody who did it is in this room.
What? Ghost host. No.
Ghost host. Did you do it?
Did you murder someone, ghost host?
Whoa. Well, it wasn't relevant to this, but Ghost Host has killed, apparently. Now we all know.
What a confession.
Kaya is the one who actually did the murdering.
Yeah, in the story here.
Yes.
In this case. But at the behest of who is now Queen Marquessa.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I feel an affinity for her because not only is she totally BA.
Yeah.
But in the Conspiracy 1 box art. We look exactly the same.
It's actually you.
It's actually terrifying.
It's creepily you.
So, yeah, Conspiracy 2, it's coming out. Not this weekend, but next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a whole new multiplayer draft format to get our hands in and mess around and then later put in our commander decks and be like, sweet. Or our cubes, for that matter.
Yeah.
People love Conspiracy because it is specifically created to provide an awesome draft experience.
Yes, and a multiplayer draft experience.
This set looks great for it so far.
And so there are things that can influence, like, how you make picks, for instance. One of the cool new cards that we are very excited about is the Archdemon?
How do you say Archangel? Do you say
Archangel.
Archangel of Tithes, Archangel Avacyn.
But I think other people say Archangel. No, that sounds so wrong. Archdemon of Poliano.
An Italian Archdemon.
Isn't, like, Fiora just, like, an entire, basically an Italian plane?
Would you like some pizza with your hell?
Are you being the Archdemon of Poliano right now?
Yes, I'm Archdemon of Poliano. Would you like some Parmesan on that?
I'm good, thank you.
I take souls and I bake pies.
What? Like pizza pies?
Pizza pies.
Okay, can I get
extra
like
extra sauce costs you 50 cents.
What? 50 cents?
Extra.
I feel like that's so little that you should either be charging more for extra sauce or not be charging for extra sauce. 50 cents is like an insulting amount that says I don't want to give you extra sauce for free, but I'm also bad at business.
This business has been in my family for years. How dare you? I send you to hell. I'm a demon.
Aren't I already in hell if I'm seeing an archdemon?
Haha, that is true.
All right. Listen, Archdemon of Poliano.
Do you want breadsticks?
I don't know. Like, tell me what they're like.
They taste like awful. It's hell. Everything tastes terrible.
No.
You guys, I'm Italian in real life. Isn't my Italian accent just spot on?
Yeah, you can tell it runs in the family.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card is sweet. Two black, black for a 5/4. What? Yeah. Flying demon?
That's right.
Did I just make up that it's flying?
No, it's flying. It's the last word. After all the other text, flying.
Oh, okay, got it.
So you draft this archdemon face up.
What?
While it is face up during the draft.
So there must be other things that can cause you to turn it down, maybe?
Well, listen. Okay. It has it on its own card.
Okay.
While it is face up during the draft, you can't look at the booster packs. You just draft blind. Once you've drafted three cards.
Yeah.
Yes, once you draft three cards blind, then you can turn the archdemon face down and continue drafting normally. But in order to take this, you have to make three random follow-up picks.
Worth it.
Yeah, I agree.
So this is the reason I said that is I think it would be really funny if there's another card that's like, if you draft this card and you have a card that's face up, you are allowed to turn it face down and ignore the rules. But it would be really especially funny with this demon because you would not know that you're
drafting. You wouldn't know that you had done it. So that wouldn't work.
You would know because you would take it, but you wouldn't be able to pick it from the pack.
No, like you don't. I don't think you get to look at it.
What? Why not?
Wait.
It just says you must draft the cards at random.
Okay, that's true. But if you were playing by like tournament rules, you wouldn't be able to look at it until the end of the pack.
Yeah, that's true. That tournament rules.
And I feel like for fun rules, you also shouldn't look at them.
Not until you're done with that pack.
It's just a surprise.
Oh, it's a surprise. Okay, that might
be
even better.
Big time surprise.
I love this card because I love that Conspiracy can have fun with draft in ways that it's not kind of allowed to have fun in real life because it's just too weird.
Yeah, ooh, but that's just too weird.
That seems really cool.
That's pretty awesome.
So we had a preview card for Conspiracy, which we're pretty excited about, and it has got one of the best names in the set so far.
Yeah.
Very punny, which is accurate, which is, you know, a good reason why we have it. Assemble the Rank and Vial. And the art on this card is really cool too because it's like, so, what are these? Are these zombies?
You know, I feel like yes. I feel like yes, they are.
One of them's got their head in like a little birdcage.
Yep.
Contraption.
Well, you know, sometimes if you're a zombie, it just won't stop biting people.
Yeah, I get it.
Put its head in a birdcage for a bit.
So this is a Conspiracy, which is a special kind of card. Conspiracy Hidden Agenda. So you start the game with this Conspiracy face down in your command zone and secretly name a card. You may turn this Conspiracy face up at any time and reveal the chosen name. Creatures you control with the chosen name have, when this creature dies, you may pay B black mana. If you do, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped.
Yeah.
So this works if you have several creatures of the same name in your deck, which happens in Conspiracy. Yes. So it could be a really cool strategy.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to spend mana casting it.
Nope.
It is just always there, nor do you have to draw it.
Nope.
It begins in your command zone.
Yeah. And pretty sweet card overall.
Yeah. We're also going to see a reprint of Inquisition of Kozilek.
Yes, we are.
Which is nice, as that is a modern staple.
Yeah, that's going to be nice, because that card's expensive.
Yeah, it is. But it is quite good. Target player reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-land card from it with converted mana cost 3 or less. That player discards that card. Single black.
Yeah, it's a good card.
Yep, we also have, so we mentioned Queen Marquesa is here.
Yes.
She is 1 red, white, black for a 3/3 with Death Touch and Haste. When she enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch.
Ooh, my greatest dream.
Monarch. We'll talk about that in a second. At the beginning of your upkeep, and if an opponent is the Monarch, put a 1/1 black assassin creature token with Death Touch and Haste onto the battlefield.
Awesome.
Yes.
I like her because she's Mardu. She's a sweet Mardu queen.
Yeah. My sweet Mardu queen. I love that song. I love that song.
It sounds like a little folksy.
It does. It's like
my
a country.
My sweet Mardu queen. Why you gotta be so mean? You've got death touch. I love you much. Oh, yes, my sweet Mardu queen.
I think it'd be better if it's something like, you death touched my heart.
But the only rhyme for heart is fart.
What? That is not true. There's also lart.
Great rhyming.
Tart.
Tart.
Okay, so what happens? So Monarch.
Yeah, monarch is one of our new sort of mechanical words that we're experiencing in conspiracy. I could have said that better. I admit, I freely admit. Get your face off the microphone. I can hear your nose on it. Megan's just nuzzling the microphone over here. Wow, you really are tired.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Monarch.
So if you are the monarch, at the beginning of your end step, you get to draw a card, which is obviously some sick card advantage. And then there's cards that care about who is the monarch. There might be cards that give you a bonus if you are the monarch. And there's cards like Queen Marquesa or one that came with this the article on Daily MTG that's all about the mechanics.
Yeah.
Which is Crown Hunter Hireling. When it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch. Crown Hunter Hireling can't attack unless defending player is the monarch.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of cards that switch who's the monarch back and forth, and it'll probably happen quite a few times during the game.
Yes. You can also switch who is the monarch by if you deal combat damage with a creature to the monarch, you become the new monarch.
Sweet.
Yeah. So it is yet another layer of political scheming and wheeling and dealing.
So, Megan, when we play this, are we going to bring a crown so that we can put a crown on whoever the monarch is?
Yes.
Instead of, because there's a card that you can have, which is very lovely art, by the way, which you can place in front of you to denote the monarch. Yep. But I think we should take it a step further.
Agreed. If you are really committed to Commander and to Conspiracy, you will bring a crown to every game.
I agree. Or a tiara.
Every time you play it.
I have a flower crown in my car right now.
Okay, we're not crowning, like, the monarch of spring or some bullshit like that.
Do you want to know why I have a flower crown in my car? Because I did a show, a comedy show, at somebody's wedding.
Oh, that's right.
And I was a flower girl, and they're like, you have to wear the crown. And I was like, I've never done anything stranger in my life.
Yeah.
But there you go. Anyway. Hire us for your weddings. Put a crown on. Put a crown on it. So not only do we have Monarch in this new set, but we've got several other things. Monstrosity, of course, is making its return, rearing its ugly or beautiful head, however you feel about Monstrosity. But we have some new stuff, including this cute little new card that has Goad on it. Goad.
That's right.
So this little buddy is named Jeering Homunculus. He's Flibbledy Gibbet's best friend.
He's Mickle-thud.
Mickle-thud. He's an 0-4 for one and a blue. When Jeering Homunculus enters the battlefield, you may goad target creature. And that means, until your next turn, that creature attacks each combat if able and attacks a player other than you if able.
Yeah, pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Get people to attack other people for you. It's getting them to do your dirty work for you.
And it's going
to
be like, don't be mad at me. I didn't tell, I'm not controlling this dude.
No. I mean, I just maybe goaded him a little bit into doing it.
Goad. Goad is a new, and I'm, you know, and maybe Flibbledibbets has a new friend.
Flibblethup.
Flibblethup.
Flibblethup. Wait, go up a bit?
Which one?
No, we already did that one. Go up again. Wait, we already did that one. Go down.
Yep.
Go down?
Yep.
Nope, go up.
There it is.
Now stop.
Melee! Melee's our next mechanic we're going to talk about. It's on this card, Deputized Protester. 2 and a red for a 2/1. It has menace because, hey, why not? Melee, whenever this creature attacks, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each opponent you attacked with a creature this combat.
So, obviously, this can only attack one opponent, but if you're attacking with multiple creatures at different opponents, then this will get a bonus for each other person you are attacking.
Yeah, I forgot about that for a second, that you could do that.
Yeah.
In this format.
It's a melee, buddy.
Oh, that's going to be cool.
Go crazy.
Megan, are you excited to draft Conspiracy 2?
I am.
Me 3.
No, it's Conspiracy 2.
That's what I said.
You said me 3.
Oh. God damn it.
We also have Council's Dilemma.
Yes.
Which is a little bit of an update.
Which we had Will of the Council last time.
Yes. Which in the case of Will of the Council, it was whichever one had more votes, it would either go with one mode or another. In this case, it's for each person who votes for one of the modes, a choice is made.
Oh.
So in this case, Counsel's Dilemma, starting with you, this is a card called Capital Punishment. Whoa.
Oh, yikes.
Four black black for getting a sorcery. Real. Starting with you, each player votes for death or taxes. Each opponent sacrifices a creature for each death vote and discards a card for each taxes vote.
What a cool design.
So it's like, no matter which one they choose, yeah. It sucks. But there you go.
So basically, you have to sacrifice and discard?
Like, say you had three opponents. So say there were four of you total, and you said death. So they all have to sacrifice a creature already.
And you?
And then they all
said... Do you as well?
Each opponent sacrifices, so no.
Oh, okay.
And then they go taxes, taxes, taxes. They each have to discard three cards.
Wow.
This card seems sick. Sick. It is a rare.
Yeah.
obviously, as you could have something as... like them sacrificing a creature and discarding three cards apiece.
Cool.
Of course, it is six mana, so if they only have one card in hand,
yeah, that's true.
Not the worst,
that's
but true. you're still getting that creature sacrifice and a card out of their hand.
So, just in case you don't know what monstrosity is, we'll Ooh, quick go back
old
over
friend
it
from Theros.
Yes,
which will Theros. Also be showing up in Conspiracy.
I really liked Theros, so
me too.
I'm kind of happy to see Monstrosity again. This is Domesticated Hydra, which, by the way, children's...
That's an oxymoron.
Do not domesticate a Hydra.
No.
It cannot
there
be
are no
pet.
Domesticated Hydras.
Two green for 3/3 Monstrosity, which is X, green. So if it's not monstrous, you may pay X and put that many +1/+1 counters on the creature and becomes monstrous.
Yep.
And as long as this creature in particular is monstrous, it has trample.
Very cool.
Great card.
Yep.
Yeah, so this set already looks spicy. There's a card that is going to, I think, be a little bit abused, and people are going to really try and draft around it.
Yeah.
Which I think can be kind of fun, which is Illusion of Choice, which is a Ooh. Single blue mana for an yeah. instant. You choose how each player votes this turn. Draw a card.
All right.
I love it.
So for those Council's Dilemma cards.
Yeah.
You could choose sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting.
Yeah. So Conspiracy, if you've never played it before, it's much like the name implies. You are trying to kind of manipulate and use your influence to bend the game to your favor. I played this at, where was I? I was in Vegas. Yeah. It's pretty fun.
You can
fun.
Combine them with other sets, too.
Yeah, we played it with two Conspiracy and one something else.
Cons, I think, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something Dragons. Like that. Still great.
Yeah, pretty cool.
But a lot of your local game stores will be offering this, no doubt, when it comes out in 2 weekends. Mm-hmm. So I would highly recommend going over there and checking it out, because it's just a really different draft experience yeah. if you've never played multiplayer draft before.
Do we mention Kaya Ghost Assassin's card real quick?
Yes.
She is obviously so cool. She's a new Planeswalker.
Yeah.
She's awesome. 2 white, black, 5 loyalty, 0, exile Kaya Ghost Assassin or up to 1 target creature. Return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of your next upkeep. You lose 2 life. -1, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. Or -2, each opponent discards a card and you draw a card.
Sick.
Notably, you could do something like -2/-2/0, and if you exile Kaya and bring her back, she'll come in with 5 loyalty.
Yeah, it was interesting to me when I first saw this. I said, she has no plus ability. There's no, like, a traditional ultimate with an emblem or anything. It doesn't matter, because Kaya can just reset her own loyalty by blinking. So
yeah, that is pretty cool.
She's loyal to no one, as somebody pointed out.
Oh.
Which I think is amazing. Amazing flavor-wise.
As many ghost assassins.
Yeah.
Are.
Assassins are lone wolves, you know?
Yeah.
Lone ghost wolves. Flavortext Theater presents movie pitches!
That's right, everybody. We are going to crack a booster of Eldritch Moon.
Ooh,
and give you some sweet movie pitches for movies that might have the titles of cards in this set.
Yeah, Megan and I, we've pitched a lot of movies.
We really have. No execs have contacted us yet.
Nobody's
but
called
we're
us.
Waiting. We're waiting for that phone call.
We are waiting.
If you are in charge
of some kind of movie studio...
Let us know.
You know what to do.
Yep.
Ring, ring, ring. So we've cracked it.
Okay.
We have not
well,
looked at these cards.
Card.
Oh, there's a flip card.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just grab one randomly from this pile.
All right. Oh, okay.
Do you have one, Megan?
Yes. This is the next film in the never-ending Jason Bourne series.
Oh, God. Okay.
Where Jason Bourne finally goes all the way back to whatever his very first inciting incident was that led him down the path, like the insane path of these however many films at this point.
Yeah.
Where he never gets to stop fighting. And he finally deals with like the root issue that caused him to become like this
super soldier.
This super soldier. And also like kind of like he's like a fighter, right? He's like a naturally kind of violent, vindictive dude.
They made him that way.
Yeah. Well, he's going to go back and grapple with the past. And finally, he's going to be able to stop fighting.
Oh, and just start loving.
Just start living a normal life.
Okay, I'd watch that, would I?
No.
This movie is kind of like, what's that one with what's-her-name? When Sandra Bullock, and she's a police officer, and she has to compete.
Miss Congeniality.
Miss Congeniality.
How do you not know the title of Miss Congeniality?
It's so good. I've seen it one time. But it's kind of like Miss Congeniality. Okay. Only this is involving, but you have to be a police officer to compete in this competition.
Uh-huh.
So there's a beauty queen. It's kind of like the reverse. And she's like, I really need to compete in the police chief, like, beauty contest. That's not beauty contest. Obviously, you have to see how good you are at handcuffing a dude, at filing paperwork, at dealing with angry moms. And she's like, I want to win this prize because she needs the money to go to police school, which has always been her dream.
Okay.
So she has to go through several montages of, like, her friends are training her to become the best police officer she can possibly be. Of course, the end of the movie, she ends up winning the competition, but not before she's defrauded as not being a real police officer, but they decide to give her the scholarship money anyway because she tried so hard. It's called Make Mischief. I just booed myself.
Okay, mine is a film. There are two ways I can go with this. I'm going with the stupid one.
Okay.
This is a film in the vein of, like, School of Rock, but it's set at a college, and it's, like, It's a college. It's a group of guys who, like, just went there because they're, like, all kind of slackers. And they were just like, oh, their parents, like, made them go to college, even though they were just like, man, I just want to bum around. And they're like, okay, they're like on the verge of getting kicked out of school because they're not putting in any effort. And the dean is like, I'm going to give you one more chance. You need to bring some sort of accolade to this school, or else I'm going to kick all of you out. And they're like, what are we good at? What are we good at? And they're like, oh man, I know. So they enter, a mooning people competition.
Oh, that's the story of my childhood.
Which they win, obviously.
Yeah.
It's called Waxing Moon.
Did you ever moon anybody as a child / adult?
No.
Oh, only me? Was it only me? All right.
I mean, of the two of us, yeah.
This film is really dark, I'm going to warn you. It's kind of similar to 1984 in that it's a future society, which I love dystopian hellscapes.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one any day and I'll read it. And in that your profession is chosen for you.
Mm-hmm.
And this young woman, her profession is assigned and it's assassin.
Mm-hmm.
So she is, her job is to go and, like, take out top leaders. But in her heart, she doesn't want to do this. She just wants to be, you know, whatever she really wants to be, like a baker or chef or something. Of course, that is not her lot in life, so she has to learn to kill or be killed. So she kind of just is like, all right, I'm gonna do it. And she starts just, like, taking people out one by one until one day, just much like the end of 1984, she realizes that she likes it because it's not work if you enjoy it. Murder.
Nice.
Yeah. Got real.
Okay, mine is about a guy who works in a forge. He's like a, you know... He's a dude who works in a forge. He's a blacksmith.
Okay.
And he realized, like, he was adopted into that profession. At least that's what he's always been told. Like, when he was a kid, he was adopted from an orphanage, and into this blacksmith's guild, because that's, like, the blacksmiths were sort of like, you know, we always need someone to, like,
impress some kids.
Well, this is, like, an old school, like, oh, we're okay. Talking about, like, kind of like Lloyd Alexander's world, right?
Yeah.
like one of those, you know, like old school or like Ursula K. Le Guin, like old school fantasy worlds with apprenticeships and things like that. And so they adopted this kid. And he eventually grows up to be a blacksmith, but he realizes that, like, even though he's very good at it, he doesn't love it.
Yeah.
But kind of like murder.
Yeah.
But instead of just staying in the forge, he decides that he's going to go out and he's going to find out what he's good at. And as he sort of, you know, he's all dirty from working in the forge all day. You know, his skin has been, like, on his fingers and in his face. It's kind of, it's, like, charred, essentially. It's, like, sooty all the time. And as he goes on this journey, he gets, you know, he like, all of those layers peel away and he figures out. Not in a real, like, you know, like, just, I mean, like, being away from a forge, he no longer is covered in, like, you know, like, soot and forge stuff.
Then he looks in a mirror, I'm beautiful.
And he eventually, you know, finds out that he wasn't just given to this orphanage, that he was kidnapped, and he gets to discover his past. It's called Iron Rites Cleansing.
Oh. What was it? Real? Oh, we'll have to watch the movie to find out.
Yeah, we'll watch the movie to find out.
All right, speaking of baking, this next movie is about a young baker whose family, she comes from a line of bakers. Her parents need her to be a baker, but she just is terrible at it. Yeah. She can't, none of her dough will rise. It's just a bunch of really flat, unleavened bread. Mm-hmm. Her cakes look more like mistakes. And she's just really sad about it. So what does she do? She makes a pact with Satan to become a good baker.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Obviously, it's like damn Yankees. And she is told that the only way her bread will rise is if she goes and puts it in an empty grave at night. It's called Rise from the Grave.
Yep. Creepy.
Yeah. Would you eat grave bread? Is that what you're going to ask me? No, I would not.
Maria, what if it's the best bread you've ever had? What if it was guaranteed to be, like, head and shoulders above every other bread you've ever tasted in your life? Like, amazing bread.
And the only difference is that it was baked in a grave.
It was, no, it wasn't even baked. It was, like, the dough had Rose. To sit overnight in a grave.
I want to say, I guess that's fine. If it's really that good, I guess I'm going to look past it. I don't know.
This next one is a kid's film that teaches words like beside, what it means to be beside something or next to.
This is a conjunction junction type situation.
Exactly. It's a conjunction junction. It's a Schoolhouse Rock type episode. But they got a little bit like more gory with it. Oh. It's called Prey Up On. It tells you, like, where is the prey now? The prey is up.
Up. On.
Is up. On a stool. And it shows, like, a rabbit on a stool, and then a wolf eats it.
This film is a continuation of The Little Mermaid, except the lead character is not the mermaid herself, Ariel, but rather the crab from that film. What was his name? Do you remember?
What? Sebastian.
Sebastian. Megan, don't give me that look. I'm old. My brain can only keep so many facts in it.
I'm tired.
It's Sebastian's film. He's the lead. He's even crankier than usual because he's a crab, and he just goes around being mad at everybody. It's like Grumpy Old Men, except it's a crab. It's called Vexing Scuttler.
this is sort of a film that is, you know, there was like those wave of kind of natural disaster style movies. I think it's specifically of like Twisters, mm-hmm. Twister.
There was more than one,
but it's called Twister,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Except instead of being weather horror, it shows the aftermath of like all of these families journeying in the aftermath of like a really terrible set of storms that just tear up everything. They can't live there anymore. It's their journey on foot because all of their stuff was destroyed to go find a better place to live.
Oh, yeah.
A new place. It's called Displace.
Displace.
No, like displaced. They were displaced.
Oh, I thought
displaced.
You meant like displaced.
But it could also just be like displaced.
Yeah.
Where are we going? Displaced.
Displace. This is a film, like, this is a Harry Potter franchise film. Mm-hmm. It's not been written yet mm-hmm. by our lovely author, mm-hmm. JK. So it's going to just be, like, an off-brand author who's somehow secured the rights to write a Harry Potter story.
Okay.
And it's about a wizarding family that has one muggle child.
Uh-huh.
I don't know about genetics, so I don't know if that's possible.
No, that's called a squib.
A squib?
Yeah, okay. Filch was a squib.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, it's got a child.
As was Arabella Fig.
Who can't do magic in the wizard family. And obviously this child, who's we're just going to name right now, is, you know, named Gina. And okay. She, of course, feels very bad because her family is all these really powerful wizards. Mm-hmm. And she just can't do anything except what normal humans can do. So she decides, once again, to make a dark pact. Mm-hmm. With whatever evil lord is happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I can't make you into a wizard because that's just impossible. Mm-hmm. But what I can do is make you able to stop the spells of wizards. So Ooh. While you can't do magic yourself, you can stop other people from having the ability to do magic.
Wow. What's it called?
It's pretty powerful. It's called Spellqueller. Did you know?
Man, hold on to that sucker. That card's expensive right now.
I can't hold on to it because we're sending it to a patron.
Right.
Do you want this, patron?
That's right, you guys. That Spellqueller is going in that pile. Okay, I have two more that are both just very brief.
Okay.
Okay, the first one is, it's a film that's... It's about a piano player, but like kind of in like a piano bar or like an old kind of like 1920s jazz piano player,
yeah.
In a divey kind of bar, who decides that they're tired of, actually it's back in the 1920s, right? And they're in a city that's just overrun by mob crime. And they're sick of it. They're so sick of the mob just running everything. And like some of their family got like booted from their jobs or from their homes or maybe even killed by the mob. So it's very personal.
Wow.
And they're just so mad, and they're such a good piano player that they make this like one sort of like piano lick that's so good and like so damn hot that it can kill people. And this jazz piano player uses this one piano vamp to kill their
this
mob
is like,
enemies.
Don't stop believing levels of awesome.
Yes. It's called Fury Blade Vamp Iron.
Boo! That would hurt.
And then the next one is I rewrote my family's history to make us all way more cool.
Yeah.
And way more bold. It's called Brazen Wolves.
I like how in your family, like, you're not the wolf family, you're the wolves.
We're the wolves.
Yeah. Well, great, great flavor text theater. Of course, remember, if you're a patron, you can sign up until the end of the month. You have until our final episode to be drawn for a mm-hmm. chance to win the Spellqueller and all of the cards we open on the show.
That's right.
For this entire month, as well as some unopened packs. So get over there, man. It's a pretty good deal. Our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out. It was great having you here mm-hmm. virtually. We like hanging out with your virtual selves.
Yes, we do.
You can hang out with us more than just on our show, of course. You can follow us on Twitter at MTAcast. We hang out there.
You can send us an email at magicdeamateur@gmail.com. If you've got a question, send it on over and we might read it and answer it in a future mailbag segment.
You can become our friend on Facebook, facebook.com/MTAcast. You can listen to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Podcasts, right on our website, or there's this nifty thing on Patreon where you can listen to episodes through patreon.com.
That's sick. You can also watch these episodes with your eyes on video over on Tolarian Community College, which also has lots of other great videos from silly sketches to great reviews of products.
Yeah, you got to check it out if you haven't yet. So from the both of us to you, thanks for listening. You are the greatest people in the universe. #fact.